Welcome back to The Takeaway. I'm Matt Katz. In advance of Labor Day weekend, we're going to end today's program with a look at the American worker. The official unemployment rate as of July was only 3.9%, and last week the stock market achieved its longest rise in history. Just this morning, the president tweeted, "For all of you that have made a fortune in the markets or seen your 401ks rise beyond your wildest expectations, more good news is coming!" So, are you feeling it?
Hi, Lisa from Seattle. Most of us working people are still paid at pre-1980 levels, and that includes those of us on Social Security, but expenses have risen 5 to 15 times.
This is Mark from Beaverton, Oregon. On average, my total compensation has outpaced cost of living, though recently I'm about at par.
My name is Patrick. I'm from Salem, Oregon. I'm a truck driver. We got a small raise last year, but minimum wage in Oregon is being raised rapidly enough that they're overtaking us. And I think the move to raise the minimum wage is really just a way to lower more of us into poverty.
This is Julia from Clayton, California. Gas prices went up, food prices went up. So I had to borrow against my home, and in order to get the new loan, I couldn't take any write-offs. So you bet my taxes went way up, too.
James from Dover, Ohio. Yes, I have almost tripled my wages over the past decade. I contribute this to hard work and always looking for new opportunities.
Hi, I'm Cindy from Northampton. 1% and 2% increases on my salary can't keep up with the cost of living. Doesn't work.
In 2018, the median American worker is bringing home around $44,500 a year. But adjusted for inflation, that's not much more than what the typical worker earned 40 years ago. And according to new data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, some workers are watching their wages fall relative to inflation. Meanwhile, CEOs have seen massive increases in their salaries. When asked by a reporter about wage stagnation in June, Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell had this to say.
Everywhere we go now, we hear about labor shortages, but where's the wage reaction? So it's a bit of a puzzle. I wouldn't say it's a mystery, but it's a bit of a puzzle.
So I'm presenting this puzzle to our next two guests. Heidi Scherholz is Director of Policy at the Economic Policy Institute and a former chief economist at the Labor Department under President Obama. And Harry Holzer is a professor of public policy at Georgetown. He also served as chief economist for the U.S. Department of Labor under President Clinton. Heidi, Harry, welcome to you both.
Thanks for having us.
So explain to us, is wage stagnation a puzzle, as Jerome Powell says it is? Heidi?
It certainly is perceived as a big puzzle by economists. We're seeing pretty low unemployment rates right now by historical standards. We're at 3.9%. The logic that economists use about why that should spur wage growth is exactly the same thing that any person on the street might think, that when your employer knows that you probably have other outside job opportunities because the unemployment rate is low and jobs are available, your employer then has to pay you higher wages to keep you. And so this tight labor market shifts economic leverage to workers. It means they have more bargaining power when their employer knows they have outside options. But bargaining power is, in some crucial sense, additive. And the other things that provide workers bargaining power, like strong labor standards, strong unions, those things have been decimated over the last few decades. And so now it takes a lower and lower unemployment rate to spur strong wage growth.
Well, I agree with a lot of the things that Heidi has said, but I would also emphasize a few more factors. Number one, productivity growth has been lousy, and it's really hard to have earnings growth without productivity growth. Now, some people will contest that and will say, you know, earnings haven't kept up with productivity growth, and there are some technical reasons for that, and too much of it is going into healthcare rather than wages. But I think productivity is part of that story. I think some of what Heidi calls bargaining power actually reflects some market forces. I think technology and globalization have made it easier for employers to get work done in other ways, whether it's by machines or by offshoring work or jobs where Americans without a lot of education used to get paid well, have mostly been wiped out. Today, to have a good paying job, you need workers with more skills, with some post-secondary skills. Too many workers don't have that. And I'll say one final thing. Some of the productivity story is not about worker skills. It's about employer choices. Employers do have some choices about the quality of jobs mm-hmm. they create and whether they invest in their workers. And a lot of employers are going what we often call low road, just minimize costs, and they can still make money even without productivity. And I think that's a problem too.
Harry, the average annual wage now is just over $44,000 a year. Can you give us some perspective here? How does that average compare to, say, the highest earners and then the lowest earners in the labor market?
Well, we know that the spread around any average has gotten wider and wider. So you have some people earning, you know, if you look at company executives, company CEOs, their earnings have skyrocketed. If you count their stock options, they are making $10, $20 million a year at the high end. But we increasingly have a lot of workers at the very low end, you know, earning close to the minimum wage or even less. And you see more workers at those extremes.
And those extremes have become more dramatic over the last 30 or 40 years, right?
Very much so. So there's really two separate stories here that are related to each other. One is a story about the stagnation at the average, but the other story is about inequality around mm-hmm. that average.
Heidi, why is so much going to the top? I have this stat here that in the past half century, CEO salaries have increased 937%. That's according to the Economic Policy Institute. How do you make sense of that? Why is that happening?
One important backdrop to that, it wasn't always like this. If you look at the stats sort of post-World War II up to about the 70s, as the economy grew, as productivity grew, the wages of regular workers, of say the median worker, typical workers, grew in lockstep. It wasn't like everything was perfect in the 50s and 60s. There were a lot of disparities along things like racial and gender lines. But one thing really worked: as the overall economy grew, regular folks also saw increases. Starting in around the 80s, as the economy continued to grow and productivity continued to march on, sometimes growing faster, sometimes slower, but ever rising, wages for typical people just leveled off. Mm-hmm. That we have seen stagnation for the wages of most people for most of the period since the 70s. And the thing that is different between those two periods is things that provide bargaining power for workers. So things like, we know that, for example, the real value of the minimum wage is now more than 25% below now where it was 50 years ago in 1968. We know union coverage has declined dramatically. So those are the types of things that have contributed to this breaking of the link between overall growth in the economy and stagnation for most workers. And then the companion to stagnation for most workers is, we know that that growth in the overall economy was going somewhere. It's going to the very top of the distribution.
I want to play for you both an exchange between Senator Bob Corker, a Republican from Tennessee, and the Federal Reserve Chairman, Jerome Powell. This was back in July.
The stagnation of middle-class incomes, the relatively low mobility that we have, the disappointing level of wages over a long period of time, it's all of a piece, and it all does go to that. And I think the causes of these things are really deep. It's not something we can address really successfully over time with monetary policy, as you say. So, I think it's...
What are those deep causes?
So, I think, part of it is, in our case, in the case of the United States, stagnation of educational achievement.
To both of you, what's your reaction to his answer there? Do you agree, Harry? Let's start with you.
I agree to some extent, yes. I think the rise in educational attainment was not quite as rapid during the last two or three decades as we needed it to be. Again, technology and globalization wiped out good-paying jobs for people with only high school. And in their place, there remain good-paying jobs, but usually people need some post-secondary education to get that. And education didn't rise quickly enough, I think, to keep up. And I think that's affected productivity as well. At the same time, I want to emphasize that's not the whole story. The quality of jobs matter as well as the quality of the workers who fill those jobs. And I think we've seen shortfalls on both sides. And therefore, the solution's got to involve both sides as well.
I agree with a lot of what Harry said, but I would de-emphasize the education factor. And you can actually look for the footprints of, is that the cause of this in the data? And it doesn't show up so much. Like, if it were true that our wage stagnation, the lack of wage growth, was because we needed more people with a college degree rather than people with a high school degree, we would see wage growth much faster amongst those workers with a college degree compared to workers with a high school degree or less. Because, when workers are, if there's scarce workers with a college degree, employers will raise their wages to attract the workers that they need. And it is true that workers with a college degree are seeing somewhat stronger wage growth than workers with a high school degree or less, but it's not very much stronger. We aren't seeing a huge disparity in the wage growth between those two groups of people that would signal that that's a really substantial part of this problem. I really think it is more about, you know, employers behaving in a way that kind of wrests power from workers in a whole number of ways, and policymakers not allowing labor law to evolve to keep up with those changes.
And but at the same time, fully half of American workers, even young workers, do not have any post-secondary credential. There are very large numbers of jobs, even not requiring a BA, that American workers aren't getting, and those markets remain very tight. So I continue to think, and by the way, the gap between college and high school workers is very, very large in America and much larger than overseas. And so I do think education is an important part of that story, but not the whole thing.
We've seen a big fight playing out over the minimum wage, but I was wondering if that has had an effect. We have a caller from Oregon.
My name is Patrick. I'm from Salem, Oregon. I'm a truck driver. We got a small raise last year, but minimum wage in Oregon is being raised rapidly enough that they're overtaking us. And I think the move to raise the minimum wage is really just a way to lower more of us into poverty.
Heidi, what do you make of that perception?
One of the questions that you get when you raise the minimum wage, and so it sort of squishes the wage distribution, that doesn't have to do with the minimum wage. As we know, the minimum wage is now 25%, more than 25% below where it was once you adjust for its purchasing power than it was 50 years ago. So we need a huge increase in the minimum wage. The problem that that gentleman was talking about is real, and it's that we have seen things like the decline of unions. We know the deregulation of the trucking industry, which he's in, decimated wages of truckers. So there's other factors that are keeping wages more in the middle down. We shouldn't, in that case, decide, okay, we're not going to raise wages for the people at the bottom. We need to raise wages for the people at the bottom and implement the things that would provide bargaining power to workers at the middle to also raise their wages.
And Heidi, tell me, what do you do then? You started to talk about what we can do about this. What can we do about this problem of wage stagnation? I would like to get your thoughts and then Harry's.
One of the things that is a useful backdrop to this is there's not one thing. I think there's a desire right now to look for the one big thing that's going to solve all of problems and solve inequality and raise wages for people across the distribution. And I think we have to realize wage stagnation for most workers and rising inequality is the result of decades of a really broad-based campaign, directly anti-worker policy or policies that just haven't been implemented to keep up with the changing labor market. It has happened in many different ways. So there's not one thing that can be done. But that said, if I had to pick the biggest factor that has led to those dynamics of rising inequality and wage stagnation for most workers, it's the erosion of union coverage.
And Harry, can you leave us with your single or a couple of solutions to the problem of wage stagnation?
Well, again, mine are more directly related to sort of trying to boost productivity. I think skills are really important. So my top choice would probably be to make it easier for American workers to get education credentials that the labor market values, including at the sub-BA level. I think that there's a lot of important action at community colleges and other places that could be done for workers to get some of the technical skills and other things that the labor market does value. But as I said earlier, it's not just about skills, it's also about jobs. And I think in America, we have to reward employers more who create good jobs, give them financial incentives, technical assistance, to try to create more of the kinds of jobs where, in fact, skills are valued and where productivity of workers can be higher as well. So that's where I put my emphasis, better skilled workers, better quality jobs.
Harry Holzer is a professor of public policy at Georgetown. He served as chief economist for the U.S. Department of Labor. And Heidi Scherholz is director of policy at the Economic Policy Institute. And she also served as a former chief economist at the Labor Department. Thank you so much to you both, and enjoy your Labor Day weekend.
Thank you.
You too.
And we've been hearing from so many of you about how you're doing in today's labor market. Has your pay kept up with your cost of living?
This is Dakota from Tampa, Florida. Is your question a joke? The recession killed my wages and my parents' savings.
Hi, this is Doug from Redmond, Washington. My wages have doubled over the past 10 years, with most of the increase coming in the last several years as I moved into strategic account management and sales roles.
This is Suzanne calling from Aiken, South Carolina. I lost my job in the recession in 2009, and I didn't find a new full-time job until 2011, which paid a little less than the job I'd lost. In that new job, I got about a 1% to 2% cost of living raise each year for the next 6 years.
My name is Doris. I'm calling from Greenville, South Carolina. Although I am not currently working outside the home, I now take care of my young grandson. My daughter and her husband are both teachers in South Carolina. The pay is so low that if my daughter stayed home, they would barely make ends meet on my son-in-law's salary. There would be nothing left over to save or spend on non-usual expenses like a medical bill or a home repair. And their mortgage is lower than rent in this area.
Kathy calling from Portland, Oregon. My wages have not kept pace and the least with the cost of living. I am frankly out of options of what I can cut. There's only so much, and I've hit that bottom. Wish it were different.
Thanks to everyone who weighed in on this question. And the takeaways, Amy Walter will also be diving into this issue in the coming weeks. Amy wants to know, how much is the economy going to affect the way you vote this November? If you want to weigh in on that, give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Again, our number here is 877-8-MY-TAKE. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Matt Katz. Tanzina Vega will be back next week. This is The Takeaway.